Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.
Good afternoon to you, Pastor Pani.
Good day, Tatumalata. How are you today?
We are well, thank you, Mfundisi. Kunjani kuwe?
I am very well, thank you, and greetings to all the listeners.
Lovely, thank you so much for joining us, Pastor. We're talking about understanding conflict dynamics. And, you know, we all want a harmonious home, but the reality is that family life, with its deep emotional attachments and shared history, is also a prime breeding ground for conflicts. Now, from arguments over household chores and finances to deeper power struggles and communication breakdowns, these disputes can cause significant emotional distress and strain if relationships are not handled effectively. And worse off, because this month people are going to be going home, visiting back home outside of the cities, and the people living in close proximity with each other could really be a breeding ground for family conflicts. Now, Pastor, you know, conflict is part of a family life in general. But how do you differentiate between a minor disagreement that might pass and a deep-seated issue that needs addressing?
In fact, as you are talking about, you know, the time of the year, people going back to be with their loved ones. Some people may be reluctant to go to wherever simply because of some issues, some disagreements, some conflicts that were not dealt with the last time they were together. So there is that reluctance. They're not really looking forward to seeing or meeting someone because of unresolved or outstanding issues, you know, that were not attended to. Look, the challenge is, who decides if a certain matter is a minor disagreement or a conflict? Because from my perspective, it can be just a minor disagreement that is not worth attending to. And the next person can look at it differently, you know, and so the idea of saying, no, let's put a label to certain actions as minor and others as being major conflicts and worth addressing, I think can be problematic. I think the principle should be, whenever there's an area of disagreement, whenever there's an area of not seeing eye to eye, whenever there's an area that causes some tension, big or small, let's attend to it. Let's not sweep it under the carpet. Let's deal with it, because sometimes if you want to sweep it under the carpet, the other person may want to attend to it, you know, because from their perspective, it warrants dealing with it and resolving it. So the idea of saying this is minor, this is major, can be problematic. I think the principle is that let's attend to every area, big and small, that causes tension within the family.
Very important what you're saying. Now, how do we know then when we might be holding onto a conflict unnecessarily? And I've seen such cases. And when is it truly time to just let go of something for the greater good of the relationship?
I think the challenge can be there has been an issue and there are attempts to deal with it and we are trying to resolve it. And those attempts, you know, are not yielding fruits. And one can say, okay, we've tried this, it has not worked. Do we, go about, you know, our lives, or do we hold on to it, or do we postpone dealing with it? Do we ignore it? You know, I think the challenge is always how the matter is dealt with. You know, what strategies are employed. As you said in your introduction, conflicts, disagreements are inevitable. They happen all the time in and outside of family. The question is how do you deal with it?
Yeah.
There's a healthy way and there are unhealthy ways of handling or dealing with issues of disagreement, tension, and conflicts. So we should not hold on to it unnecessarily. Let's deal with it, but let's deal with it properly.
Mm-hmm.
Let's deal with it in a manner that is healthy. Let's deal with it in a manner that benefits the relationship and the family in the long run.
Yeah, I think it's important what you're saying, because we see that sometimes the disagreement really may not be that much, but people have thrown their courts, their toys out of the court, and the relationship is messed up, completely damaged because of unwillingness to say, let me just let go of this for the greater good of the relationship. And I think pride there comes in place. And I'm reminded of a saying that says, pride always comes before the fall. My goodness. Now, what role, Pastor, do personal values, and boundaries play in this decision-making process? Are some issues non-negotiable? I mean, I've heard people saying, well, this for me is a breaking point.
I think we do a lot of things based on what we value. You know, our values inform our actions and yes, decision making as well. Sometimes we can assume that because this is one family, you know, this is the same household, we therefore hold similar values. Sometimes that can be true. I think in most cases it can be true, but I think here and there, one member of the household or family can have a different set of value around a certain matter. And that will manifest itself during times of conflict, during times of issues that must be dealt with. Some people have, yes, this is a non-negotiable. If this has happened, I have no room, you know, for doing this or for letting go. I have no room, you know, so the value can be when this point has been reached, this will be the action or reaction, you know, based on the value. I am prepared for us to sit down and discuss it. And for some person, once you've done this, it's a point of no return.
Yeah.
It's a deal breaker. I want to see you no more. I am done. I am moving on. And that will be informed by values and boundaries that they have. You have hurt me. I'm not going to allow you to hurt me anymore. Therefore, I am moving away. You know, I don't want to deal with it. It has reached a point of no return. And therefore people, you know, and it becomes a relationship breaker or a deal breaker. And there's no way of going back. There's no way that this person can remain in a certain relationship because the boundary was crossed.
Yeah.
The limit was reached and they're not going back.
I've heard people talking about deal breakers. And when you hear in certain instances, the talk of deal breakers, you find that perhaps some of the things are burdens from other experiences, not necessarily of this particular relationship. Do you find that to be true?
It does happen that certain experiences trigger unresolved matters of the past. And this can even be childhood issues. And therefore, when something occurs, it takes them back to that point, you know. And therefore, how they deal with the new, you know, issue now in 2025, so how they deal with it is also informed by the pain of the past, by the experience of the past, by a trauma that was not dealt with, that was unresolved. Yes, so issues of the past can be triggered by new and present realities and issues.
Now, if someone decides a conflict needs to be confronted, what is the healthiest way to initiate that difficult conversation? What are the do's and don'ts there?
I think this is very important. I'm not saying that what we've discussed already has not been, you know, discussed, but the how part is very important.
Yeah.
I think the first thing is in therapy, maybe not in therapy, but in interpersonal relationships. It really matters how an issue is worded, the choice of words, the language that is used. I think that is very, very critical, because sometimes words can exaggerate an issue simply because of how it was worded, simply how it was expressed, even if it was not as big as it was, but simply because of how it was phrased or expressed, it now seems to be a very, very big and serious issues. So if you are going to initiate a difficult conversation, you must be careful of how you address it, of how you approach it, of language, of the wording that it must be respectful. The wording must be respectful. The wording must be precise, and also be sensitive also to the matter, to the issue, and to the person that you are speaking to. I think another critical area when you're going to initiate a difficult conversation is make sure that the time is right and the place is right.
Yeah.
Sometimes you want to initiate it at the most awkward time. The place is wrong. The people that are there should not supposed to be there. This must be just between this person and that person. But when you are now address it, you know, and you ignore all that, and everyone jumps in, you know, it becomes a big issue, or it becomes an issue that involves more people than it is supposed to be the case. So the time must be right, the place must be right, the wording, the language, the expression must also be right. I think what is also important is to define the problem, define the issue, so that we are not all over the place. What exactly are we dealing with here? What exactly is the problem? And be specific. You know, you broke the cup, or you used my money. Be specific as to what exactly are we dealing with.
Yeah,
I think a very, very important aspect also, and I need more time to talk about this. There's somebody we call separating the person from the problem. Sometimes the person that has done something becomes the problem, and we speak of him as being the problem, and don't speak to an act that the person performed. You are this instead of saying you have done this. Very, very different.
Yes.
You know, so we must always, which is why I'm saying that how we express it, the choice of language, the choice of words is very, very central. Because if you are saying you are this, you are now attacking me, and you are now dealing with me and not necessarily with an action that I have performed or done. But if you separate the person from the problem and you deal with the problem, it becomes very, very helpful. There's a lot more that we can say about this, but I'm concerned about time.
Yeah.
But in a sense, what I've listed for me are very key, are very central when you want to initiate that difficult conversation that is aiming to solve a problem or a conflict.
Yeah, yeah. You know, as you are talking, I'm listening to you, and something comes up when a person, initiates these difficult conversations. And one would say, you always break the cups here. And already, I mean, we see it and we hear it many times, the always part, the always part. And the other part will then be defensive, because the other one seems to be, blaming them for always carrying out this behavior.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So when I am under attack, I will always want to defend myself. But if we are dealing with the problem, in fact, the issue of always is also an exaggerating, because no one always does something. Even if they've done it 20 times, it's not always, because if we can really, really talk about it carefully, there can be occasions where they did not.
Yes.
But if you say always, it's an exaggeration, and someone may want to defend that.
Yeah.
And you spend 2 hours defending the always or dealing with the always instead of dealing with the problem. So how we phrase it, how we discuss it, how we express it is very, very important.
Now, Pastor, thank you so much for that. How do power imbalances within a family dynamic affect the confrontation process? For example, a parent and a child, or a dominant personality vis-a-vis a passive one. How can this dynamic be managed?
This can be very problematic. I think what helps here, and I deal with this with this in therapy, part of what should be a culture in every family is for the family to be in such a way that everyone, whether they are young or old, their rank in the family, are able to express themselves on any matter. Sometimes children are not able to express some unhappiness, some dissatisfaction, some disappointments, because the culture of that family has not allowed that. You know, it's just the parent who has the right to complain, to point fingers, you know, to say you've done this and that. But when children also have some areas of dissatisfaction, they are not able to express it. Maybe they are younger and they cannot express that to the older brother or to the older sibling. So what often helps is for family from time to time to sit on the table, on the dinner table, and say, let's talk about what you are happy with, but let's also talk about what you are unhappy with. If you create that culture from early on, and the children know that when there is something that they want to express, they are not afraid, but there is a room in that family, you know, and that culture is created. They can approach anyone, they can speak to anyone. It's not just from parents to the children, but the children are also able to say, I am not happy with this, or let's deal with this, or let's, in any other matter related to the family, there is a room for everyone to address, to express it. It can be a difficult situation where children have no voice. The young have no voice, or the girls have no voice. It's just the voice of the parents, or the voice of the older siblings, or the voice of the male children, you know. And there are others that their voice is not heard. Families must create that culture from early on so that children are able to express. This also helps the children in the future when they are on their own to be able to voice out when there's an issue that they see that requires to be attended to.
Lastly, Pastor, before I let you go, I mean, of course, this, as you said, quite a number of issues that you would have touched on because of time. Perhaps we can, I think we'll probably talk to the producer to arrange another time so that we can actually, maybe have a second bite at this. But before I let you go, if a decision is made to bury the hatchet and move towards reconciliation, what are the steps to genuinely forgive and move forward instead of letting resentment fester?
I think, in a nutshell, when it's important that we acknowledge that there is a tension, that there's a disagreement, that you are not happy about something, that must be acknowledged. And the person that may have caused or have done wrong, they must take ownership. We can't have people that they want to escape, they want to defend, they want to justify, they want to make excuses. Otherwise, something is never resolved and there's no true and genuine reconciliation. Let's bring the matter to the table, and people must have ownership, must acknowledge the hurt that they have caused, if there was a hurt. And then the second part is that, please, let's ask for forgiveness. If you are called out to have done wrong, forgive, and forgiveness must be granted. So the person that have done something must ask for forgiveness.
Yes, forgiveness
must be granted. Mm-hmm. But very, very important, there must also be some assurance that there will be avoidance to repeat the same, act that led to the conflict in the first place. Because you want a situation where you are assured that what has happened will not happen again, and then you look to the future, you are happy, you are reconciled. But when that is not expressed, that I am repenting, I vow not to do this again, you are always on the edge. You are always expecting the same action to happen. So for me, reconciliation requires those four things that I've mentioned.
Beautiful. Pastor, we'll, have another bite at this. And thank you so, so much for joining us this afternoon.
Awesome.
Truly a pleasure. And have a fantastic evening ahead.
Thank you. Blessings to you and the listeners.
Thank you so much, Pastor. Bye-bye.
Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.